40 years ago, President Ronald Reagan argued that America is and will always be a shining city on a hill. Today on episode 14 of The Public Diplomat, we're going to talk about American exceptionalism. Guy Chet, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
You're an American historian. What does American exceptionalism mean, and where did that term come from?
So the sense that the idea that America is different from Europe, better or worse, is as old as America, as the discovery of America. But the origin of the term American exceptionalism is in the first half of the 20th century, up till about World War II. And it comes from the sense of bewilderment of socialists in Europe and in America as to why Americans, alone among all the nations of the world, were so resistant to socialism. If you want to think of a modern equivalent, it's like how we all discuss how the world discusses soccer. Soccer is such a wonderful game. It's so great, so exciting.
You mean football?
I mean soccer. So, what's the problem with Americans? You know, why don't Americans understand that it's a great game? And it was the same puzzlement about socialism in the first half of the 20th century, in that all the industrialized nations of the world were embracing socialism and experimenting with various kinds of socialism. Okay, revolutionary socialism in Russia, democratic socialism in Scandinavia and Western Europe, corporatist socialism in fascist Italy, national socialism in Germany. So everyone was in it. It was seen as a more modern, more energetic, more efficient way of organizing society and the economy and workers and capital. And people liked it. It was popular, except in America, okay, where it never caught on. So socialists were scratching their heads and wondering, America is modern in every other way. It's industrialized. It's part of us. It's part of the West. But for some reason, it's lagging behind. You know, the world is advancing towards socialism or towards soccer. And this one country is exceptional. It's the exception to the rule. That's the origin of the term.
Okay. So we're talking about a criticism. We're talking about the identification of the United States as different than other nations. But then it changes in the coming years, in the coming decades, right? And Ronald Reagan is one of the leaders of reframing the term American exceptionalism. How did Reagan see American exceptionalism?
So if the term originally, when Reagan, I'm assuming, was coming up and developing his political sensibilities, if the term originally identified a problem with America, again, this natural immunity that Americans had towards socialism, a problem that needs to be fixed somehow, the American mainstream resisted this idea that Americans' distaste for socialism is a problem. Instead, they saw it as a virtue that needs to be celebrated rather than a problem to be fixed. And so this explains how the term, which originally identified a problem with America, came to be associated with a political side that in fact celebrated America.
Well, I want to talk about, so we take it from the early days when it's an identification of difference to an early criticism to turning lemons into lemonade, as we always do in the United States, right? And pointing to America's virtue. And again, you know, when we talk about the greatness of America, you know, whether criticism or supportive, we're talking about what is great about the United States in so many ways: freedom, economic opportunity, the ability to follow the American dream. There are so many ways of looking at it. I want to throw up on the board a quote by President Barack Obama, because he will come back a couple of decades later after Reagan and once again reframe the concept of American exceptionalism. And Obama says, look, I believe in American exceptionalism, right? Obama loves the United States. Says, I believe in American exceptionalism, but in the same way that the Greeks do or the Brits do, right? So how does Obama reframe American exceptionalism?
So that quotation is fairly explicit in the sense that it sees American exceptionalism as a catchphrase that Americans use to describe Americans' national characteristics, national character. But other countries have their national character, and so they might as well use the term Greek exceptionalism or French exceptionalism. And so I think the debate here between the Reagan understanding and the Obama understanding is whether the United States is one of many countries, each with its own national identity, or whether the United States really stands apart again, Reagan had it for good, others had it for ill, but that it's not simply one in a series of countries. And when you look at the different traits of America, that look, Europeans look at America and scratch their heads, okay? Because certainly they all have their idiosyncrasies. You know, Greek has its unique features, and Denmark and France and Romania, but they all of these countries look at the United States not just as different, but as truly weird. And they all sense that the United States is different from Denmark, not like France is different from Denmark or Greece is different from Denmark, in the sense with also, you know, the different sports and the different sociology and the different cultural aspects and different demographics and the political aspects of, you know, the quirky political system and the fear of government and the guns and everything else. So there's this sense that the Obama quotation denies, the sense around the world and in the United States among the other side of the political spectrum is that all the industrialized countries of the world are different within a certain framework. This is different from that, but the United States is outside that framework. It's its own case.
Absolutely. Well, let's take Reagan's metaphor and expand it to Obama as well, right? Ronald Reagan says America is a city shining on a hill, meaning it's above others, right? And Obama says, yeah, it's on a hill, but there are other hills around it with other flashing lights as well. Other cities as well. And let's look at the political divide in regards to American exceptionalism. I want to throw on the boards a chart on. I want to throw data from 2021 from the Pew Research Center. And they asked Americans how much they disagree or agree with the following statements, right? The first statement is that the United States stands above all other countries in the world. Second statement is the United States is one of the greatest countries along with others, signifying, yeah, it's on a hill with a few other countries, right? Well, if you look at the overall sense of agreement upon this, the vast majority of Americans in this poll, 75%, agree with the first two things, right? The America is shining city on a hill with a few other cities next to it. But what we see when you segment the data, and it's really important to look at the specifics of the data, is that there's a major convergence, right? There's a big change when you look at younger people versus older people, and when you look at the political spectrum from left to right. So let's break this down. Let's look at the numbers here. What we see is that the younger you are, the more likely you are to agree with the third statement. And the third statement is other countries are better than the United States. So if Reagan said that the United States is on a hill, this metaphor would say the United States is in a valley, right? And when you look at younger people, 42% of them view the United States as standing in a valley, not on a hill, right? Other countries are better than the United States. And then, so, you know, if you compare people 18 to 29, 42% of those people view other nations as better than the United States, whereas only 10% of people 65 and older agree with that statement. And when you break down the numbers by political ideology, we see that those who lean Republicans, right? Only 18% of young Republicans agree with the third statement, whereas only 3% of older Republicans agree with this statement. Contrast that with Democrats, who are 55% of young Democrats between the age of 18 to 29 believe that other nations are better than the United States, whereas only 18% of older Democrats, 65 and older, agree with that. So to sum up, I know there are a lot of numbers here, but the younger you are and the more liberal or more democratic leaning you are, the more you're likely to agree that other nations are better than the United States. Guy, what happened here? What do you think?
Often when you and I talk, you like to talk about a pendulum.
Yes.
If in our discussion today, I said that the term started on the left as a way to identify a problem, a deficiency, a problem with America that needs fixing. And then it was taken up by the other side and said, no, this is not a problem. This is a virtue that needs to be preserved and celebrated. All we're seeing is the left again embracing this its original idea that the United States, yes, is different. On the fact that the United States is different, there's your numbers show there's virtually wall-to-wall agreement on the political spectrum that goes from Bill Maher to Bill O'Reilly. Everyone agrees that the United States is different with all those quirks that I mentioned earlier. The difference is that Bill Maher laments this difference and wishes that the United States will conform to the path of other Western liberal democracies.
In how we treat, for example, if you listen to criticism, right? Why is the United States not not taking care of the poor? Why is there no more political equality? Why is voting, right? Why is healthcare? Those are criticisms
right.
from the left, where on the right, you know, you see more views of the United States as a land of opportunity and a place that people that shines with political values and so forth, right? So it's really an argument about that. How we're not only how we're different, but what are the values, right? What should we aspire
to? Right. It's whether the United States should look at, again, given the fact that they all agree that the United States is different, should we look at other countries and emulate them, which is, again, those who respond to the poll in the way that you said suggest that, or should we look at the other world and say, thank goodness, we are different, a shining city on a hill, and preserve that difference. And so on the world stage, if you extend that, it's when the United States gets involved in the world and extends its or promotes its values, is it promoting something good, as Reagan would say, or is it promoting something bad that it's not a good thing, it's a problem? Okay, so that's the way it plays itself out on the world stage.
You're really pointing to the paradox of American power, right? When there is a problem in the world, there is major famine, major hunger, Russia invades Ukraine, COVID, people don't look at Denmark or Greece and say, hey, come in and save the day. They look to the United States, right? But when the United States gets involved, like they did in Somalia, right? They try to respond to a humanitarian crisis. 2 months later, Black Hawk down, right? So how do we take, you know, the paradox of American power, American involvement, is the United States in its foreign affairs, is it in foreign intervention, is it virtuous or not? This is a paradox we see all the time.
I would question the use of the term paradox, because it's not paradoxical that somebody who's having a problem, somebody who's weak or poor, is looking for assistance from somebody who's rich and powerful. So that's not something that's bewildering or surprising. And neither is the fact that when you do get help from somebody rich and powerful, you then resent it, because then somebody else is in your business, and all of a sudden you're now, your neighbors know that you're in the camp of this rich and powerful guy, or this rich and powerful country in this case. So I think it's natural, it's to be expected that small, weak countries want stuff or services from rich and powerful countries, but then since there are always strings attached, they don't like it. So I think the paradox is not a paradox. And I think when I said that Europeans or people around the world scratch their heads at the United States, when the United States then kind of acts in your neck of the woods, you start looking at aspects of American culture and thinking about the implications for about how different the United States, which now is right here in our location, you start recognizing how different the United States is from our country. And so it kind of drives this observation about difference.
Absolutely. And it leads to another paradox. I mean, really, we're talking about American exceptionalism in foreign affairs, right? Which is, you know, a lot of people writing about anti-Americanism are pointing to American exceptionalism, this notion of American arrogance and, you know, the policeman of the world. That's been a criticism. But the real paradox is the conversation about American exceptionalism ultimately is a domestic conversation. Ultimately, it's a conversation about who we are, who should we aspire to be, and how do we look at ourselves? I want to throw another chart from Pew Research. This one takes longitudinal data from 2011 all the way to 2021. So a decade's worth of data. And same three questions as before. It's not about differences. It's about better or worse, right? Is the United States, does it stand above all other countries in the world? Or do other countries, or other countries much better than the United States, right? And what we see here is really interesting. In 2011, both Democrats and Republicans, the majority of them, agree with the first two statements. The United States is better than other countries, or is among the best countries in the world. But what you see over the next 10 years, Republicans, the number of Republicans who think other countries are better changes from 8 to 11. On the Democratic side, it changes from 8 to 34%, right? So if back in the day, 10 years ago, or right, only 1 in 10 Democrats agreed that other nations are better, suddenly it's 1/3. What's going on? What led to the shift? Is this an internal narrative, or is this a response to American foreign policy?
It is definitely an internal narrative. Okay. It's I don't mean to separate, you know, that foreign policy doesn't influence domestic politics at all. But clearly, the role of the United States on the world stage is an outgrowth of your understanding of what the United States is. Is the United States a good country or a bad country? Is the United States a good country and therefore worthy of global leadership and wielding power around the world and is a force for good? Or are you less impressed with the United States? It's not a good country. It's a racist country, an unjust country, and therefore unworthy of wielding power abroad. So the question is, I think, that these numbers raise is, what happened? You show a stability on the Republican side, on the right. You know, the numbers that you show have been stable throughout the period that's polled. Whereas on the Democratic side, something has happened. And so the question is, what happened in the last decade to convince people on the left that their country is not a good country, not something...
Or that other countries are much better. Maybe Denmark and Sweden and France are just doing much better than we are.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant good country comparatively to the other industrialized nations of the world.
Yes.
And again, this goes back to the origin of the term American exceptionalism, which again, the socialists, again, on the left, they looked at the industrialized nations and they saw progress, you know, good progress towards socialism, more just society, better use of resources, et cetera, except for one country that is lagging behind, that comparatively is not as good. And so the question to be answered is what happened on the Democratic side of the American political spectrum to suggest to their constituents that this is not a good country, that this country needs to emulate other countries rather than to show other countries the way. And that, you know, I'm sure deserves its own show, but I'm assuming it's not something that just happened in an instance. I think it's some sort of gradual development because this critique has been voiced ever since the early 1900s by those socialists that we discussed, and throughout the second half of the 20th century by critics of American, not so much American foreign policy, although that too, but for the most part, American domestic policy. And again, if we talk about that political spectrum from Bill Maher to Bill O'Reilly, that voice that identifies a problem in America that needs to be fixed has always been voiced and has been popular. And so maybe it really is simply you're the expert. Maybe it's a social media phenomenon that this voice within the Democratic spectrum with new media received a greater audience.
And in the mainstream press and in universities, we see this in the curriculum of schools. We see it in many ways, but I do want to point something really important, and that is the ability to point out the fault of your nation is, and the ability to do it in a free manner without any pushback from the government is one of the things that make America truly exceptional. So Guy, on that point, I want to end the show. I hope the listeners learned a little bit about the history of American exceptionalism and the fact that ultimately, while it really talks about America's role in the world, it so much really comes down to domestic narrative about who we are and who we should strive to be. Guy, thank you so much.
Can I add one more thing?
Final say, go for it.
The term American exceptionalism is often dismissed, because it's associated with the right, it's dismissed on the left as anti-intellectual political bluster and propaganda. And I hope this discussion demonstrated that it's incorrect historically in the sense that American exceptionalism, this observation and analysis about America and the world and America, American culture, is a product of intellectuals. It's not anti-intellectual. It came from the realm of political science and sociology that identified all these differences in American society. So it's not anti-intellectual. It was and still is, I think, a true effort to understand America.
And that's why I like having an historian on the show with me. For Guy Chet and me, thank you all for listening to The Public Diplomat, episode number 14. What do you think about American exceptionalism? And where do you think the United States is? On a hill above other nations or in the valley right below them? Let us know in the comments.